You are about to hear excerpts from a candidate forum organized December 19, 2017 by the Young Democrats of Johnson County, Kansas. This forum featured the four candidates currently campaigning to be selected in the August 7 primary to compete in the November 6 general election to represent the 3rd Kansas district in the U.S. House. The incumbent is Republican Kevin Yoder. The full forum is available at workingjournalistpress.com. The opinions you are about to hear are those of the speakers and do not reflect any official position of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project, or any employees or volunteers. We will first hear opening remarks, starting with Jay Seide.
I'm kind of an accidental politician. 2016, I was just like you. I was sitting out there in the audience because I was concerned about the economy, about the way the state was being run. I started showing up at events like this and started talking to people, and I've got a degree in economics and an MBA in finance, and I guess you could call me kind of a quant. You know, I study numbers, I look at trends, I look at other industries and states that are doing things better than we were, and try to figure out how can we make changes that are going to be helpful to improve everybody's life in Kansas. And I came to these events and I started talking to people. And I like to talk, my wife will tell you that. So I do a lot of talking, I have strong opinions, but I'm always willing to learn from somebody. I don't think I have all the answers, but I definitely have an opinion, and I'm not afraid to share them. Got a little music going. And so I got pulled away from the meeting one night, and they pulled me into a room and said, we'd like to have you come to a lunch on Tuesday around 1 o'clock. And I said, what for? And they said, well, we'll tell you when you get there. And being a typical person like yourselves, I thought they were hitting me for money. And so I go, okay, I guess I can show up for that. And I show up, and there's a few people from the party there. There's also some faces I didn't recognize. And they were from Washington, D.C. They were Democratic people that came to Kansas City to find a candidate. And they asked me if I'd be willing to run. And I was in shock, because I never thought about being a politician. I know a lot of politicians, and I just hadn't crossed my mind for a second. And I told them I'd have to think about it, and actually I was so flattered that they asked me to run, that I said there's no way I can turn that down. And I did my research, and like I say, I'm a quant, and I told some friends I was thinking about running, and they go, Jay, why? He said, you can't win. Democrats can't win in Kansas. And I said, I know, but every once in a while somebody has to stand up. And so I decided to stand up. And I did my number crunching like I always do. And I knew that 2016 was going to be a tough road. You know, I had no name recognition, I had no money, I had no political infrastructure. All I had was a lot of heart. But I knew if I ran hard, that if I ran again in 2018, I can win, because I will have the name recognition in 18. And that was my whole goal. So the fact that I'm standing here, it just didn't happen recently. It started in 2016 when I made the decision to run. Nobody, not even the best politician in my lifetime, Barack Obama, could win the first time he ran a congressional race against an incumbent. And that's what we need to figure out here in Kansas. If we're going to win the congressional race, you have to have somebody willing to run twice. And that's never happened here since Dennis Moore stepped down in 2009. So I'm here to make it happen. I'm here to change the trend. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for coming tonight. I realize that this is a busy season for everyone, so I appreciate your time coming this evening. I am a teacher by profession, and I've been a teacher for the last 26 years. I first started as a teacher in Wichita, where I grew up, and about 17 years ago, my wife and I moved here to Kansas City, and that's where I continued my teaching career. Now, as a teacher, I have taught in a wide variety of settings. I have worked with at-risk students, I've worked with honor students, I've taught in public schools, private schools, colleges, and high schools. And over the course of my 26 years, in the classroom. I have seen just about everything you can possibly see in a classroom. I have had students that have successfully navigated their coursework, they've graduated. As a high school teacher, some of my students have gone on to college. I've had others that after graduation have gone on to the armed services, some joined the workforce. But I've also had students who have struggled mightily against some very serious obstacles. I've had students who have wrestled with crippling depression. I've had students who have come from grinding poverty, who have dealt with serious violence and trauma at home. I've had students that are homeless. I've even had students of mine shot and killed. My point is, as a teacher, I have seen just about everything there is to see. I have seen all the things that middle-class families struggle with. And I think that that gives me particular insight running as a candidate. And over the last several years, I've become increasingly concerned that we have elected officials who have largely forgotten what it's like for so many of our working families. And it was that reason that made me decide to become a candidate. Now, as a candidate, I think that there are several things that I bring to the table. And one is that I've spent 26 years as a teacher, and I know what it's like for a lot of the people on the ground level. I know the effect of legislation and policy and what it does to families. Now, I also bring to the table a shared experience. I am a member of the middle class. I know what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck. When my wife and I first started having a family, we made that fateful decision that the cost of childcare is prohibitively expensive. In fact, it matched my wife's salary, who was also a school teacher. And at that point, we made the decision that she would stay at home and look after the kids, but that meant I would have to work three jobs in order for us to make our mortgage payment. So I taught school until 3 o'clock, I moved furniture for several hours, and then taught night classes at Johnson County Community College. And that's just what we had to do in order to make sure that we made ends meet. Now, I also know what it's like to wrestle with those crushing healthcare costs. We faced a period where healthcare premiums matched our mortgage payment, and it was a financially unsustainable situation for us. We were looking at certain bankruptcy. So again, I know what it's like. I have that shared experience with so many working families. Now, the other thing I bring to the table is a deep knowledge of American history. I have taught this subject for 26 years. I have a PhD in the subject. So when it comes time to talk about governmental policy and roles of government, I am not interested in big government or small government. I want good government that is responsive to the needs of the people. And that's why I'm here.
Hello, my name is Brent Welder. First of all, I just want to thank, again, the Young Democrats. I've spent a lot of time with them through this campaign, their energy, their professionalism, and their ability to organize for what's so important here, which is fighting for regular people, and a big part of that is meeting Kevin Yoder. So thank you so much for everything that you're doing with the Young Democrats. Also, I'd like to introduce my wife, the love of my life, and also the strongest woman that I've ever met in my life. I don't know where she is. I think she's in the back there. Oh, over here. Christy Mulder. Christy is an absolute inspiration to me every single day. And frankly, she has the toughest job in this whole thing. She has to be a full-time lawyer. She's a union side labor lawyer, a full-time mom, and a full-time political spouse. And there's no way I'd be able to do this quest without her. So she means everything to me. Now, the thing is, we are in a really, really difficult time in this country. We have people out there who need a voice in this country that are struggling, that are hurting. And unfortunately, those people are the people who have no voice whatsoever in our government. And there's one group of people that is the only group that does have a voice, and it's the people that need it least. It's the billionaires. It's the giant corporations. I've been in politics my entire life as a Democratic organizer. I've been a lifelong Democrat. And unfortunately, throughout my career, I've seen the people who are hurting most being attacked, being taken advantage of, and the people who have so much wealth, so much unbelievable wealth that you could never imagine, getting all the benefits, all the kickbacks from our government. And it's because we're living in a society where our economy is rigged against us, against you, against your children, against your families, against your parents. And the reason that that is possible is because these giant corporations, these greedy billionaires that are taking advantage of every one of us, are taking just a small percentage of that money that they get, and they're paying off politicians in Washington. And I'll tell you, it happens on both sides of the aisle. I'm someone who believes firmly that we need to stop that cycle. We absolutely need to stop the cycle. And I'm out here in this campaign to take care of every single person that doesn't have a voice and to give them a voice. We have a lot of endorsements, a lot of momentum in this campaign that I'll talk about this evening. I received a great endorsement yesterday, for instance, from Jason Kander, who's going to help us defeat Kevin Yoder. I got an endorsement from Andrea Ramsey, who was in this race, who I consider to be an honorable person and a great leader in our community serving the underserved. And I thank her for her support in this campaign, and together, all of us, it can be done. I've been a grassroots organizer throughout my life. I'm so inspired by our campaign that we have here. And together, we are going to be able to win, defeat Kevin Yoder, and finally stand up for all of those people out there that need us most. Thank you very much.
And accessibility so that everybody can be involved in the democratic process here. And that's a very rare moment in deaf history for the deaf community to actually be involved in this process and to learn about the candidates. That deaf people can't do something, and all the things I've done in my life, people have told me that. When I went to school, I was in a public school. I was around people that could hear all the time. I made some friends. Some of them learned how to sign. Some didn't. I tried to learn how to read lips. I had cochlear implants. Once I got done with school, I decided to accept my deaf identity. I got rid of the cochlear implants, and I got rid of the colonization that people had over me and was proud of my deafness. I worked in the IT field from 17 until I was in my 30s, and I worked my way up until I was an IT manager. I worked with 300 employees at that time. That was the last job that I had. There were no deaf people. I worked with all of these people who could hear, and that's what I was able to do. That's what a deaf person was able to do, to face these obstacles. It didn't stop me. It didn't stop me. I kept going. When my father passed away, he passed away of a heart attack in 2009. That caused me to look at my life in a different way and to really focus on what I wanted to do. I had the experience, I had the skills, I had the ability to fight for deaf rights, and so I decided to stop working at the time, and I wanted to travel, and I went and traveled 47 different states. I met different communities, and I was looking for what I could do for them. I went and traveled for 2 years across the world, and I made connections with so many deaf communities all over the country. I made videos for 2 years about these different cultures that I met. When I came back, the one thing that I was proud of is that I set up a deaf grassroots movement. And we had this group of deaf people that set it up, and it was May 4th, 2016. All 50 states at the same time had a rally. And I realized at that point that it was possible that somebody deaf could actually run for Congress, that I can help everybody, and I can defeat Yoder. Because when I win the primary, imagine what's going to happen in this country. All of America is going to be watching this third district. They're going to be looking at me saying, how did this guy make it? Oh my goodness. It's going to get the whole national attention in this community because I will be the first deaf person in Congress. That's my goal. That's why I'm here. And I want you to be part of this.
You are listening to excerpts from a candidate forum held December 19, 2017 between the four Democratic candidates to represent the 3rd District of Kansas in the U.S. House.
Our first question will deal with economic policy. So, as almost everyone probably knows, Congress's tax bill that has been proposed seems to prioritize wealthy individuals and multinational corporations over hardworking Americans. CBO projections suggest that most Americans, especially families making under $40,000 a year, will actually be worse off. If elected, how will you ensure that all of your constituents receive the support and services that they need? And we'll go ahead and start with Mr. Newman.
I don't think that there is anything that is anything salvageable from this tax bill that we are dealing with. I think it is something we need to fight against as strongly and as powerfully as we possibly can. But I also think that it is imperative that we give people something to work toward. So toward that goal, what I suggest that we need to do is develop an economic plan that is well suited for the 21st century. So for us, what I would like to see us do is that we begin offering incentives for renewable energy. And here in Kansas, that has particular meaning because the state of Kansas ranks number 2 in the country for wind power potential. And if we can develop that wind power potential, that means we have got thousands of new jobs here in Kansas. And it also means that we've got the opportunity here in the 3rd District to turn the 3rd District into a hub for renewable energy production. Because we can also manufacture the component parts that are necessary for all of those wind turbines, the infrastructure necessary to bring that energy from wind farms to the metropolitan areas. One of the things that I think we need to recognize is that Kansas City, the 3rd District in particular, sits at the crossroads between Kansas, Nebraska, and Iowa, all three of which have begun the processes of developing wind power technology. And if we can begin the advanced manufacturing necessary for those component parts, we create jobs here in the 3rd District. The other thing we need to do is we need to support public education, especially equitable public education. And by this, we need to fully fund our Title I schools. We need to make sure that we have... And we also need to make sure that we've got ample resources to recruit, retain, and develop excellent teachers and administrators. And we also need to make sure that we are developing a pathway for free college tuition. And there is something that I want to make sure that all of us understand. Very often people say, free college tuition, how is that financially possible? If we were to offer free 2-year college degrees, that would cost the United States $135 billion over 10 years. That is 1/10 of the amount of money this tax cut will cost us over that same period of time. So what we have in this tax bill is a clear indication that the Republican Party has sold out any sense of fiscal responsibility and any sense of creating opportunities for us in the community. So what I would like to see us do is to develop an economic plan that is well suited for the 21st century with renewable energies, with the dedication to equitable public education. I also think that we need to address health care costs, and there are a number of ways we can do this. I'm out of time.
before Mr. Boulder gets started, we would ask that you please hold your applause until the end of a candidate's position. Thank you.
Just today, the House of Representatives passed again a tax bill that I, even though I've been around politics for a long time and I've seen a lot of crazy Republican things, never thought that I would see in my entire life. It is an unprecedented, gigantic giveaway to corporations. But not only that, the way they're paying for it is literally by raising taxes on the people who can afford a beast. The poor, the middle class. There's so many things that we can do to lift up the middle class, and frankly, laws like this tax bill affect the most vulnerable in our society more than anyone. They affect women, they affect black people, Latinos, minorities, even more than any other group. They affect working people, they affect the poor. We need to solve the healthcare crisis in this country. And that will help lift the middle class. Women in this country are 10% more likely even than men to face bankruptcy because of healthcare costs. It is time in this country that every woman, man, and child in America gets Medicare for All as a right so we can have quality healthcare for every single person. Also, we need to raise wages in this country. We need to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. One-third of the female workforce in this country will benefit from raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. It will reduce the deficit, and it will lift wages and raise wages for every single person in this country, no matter their income level. We need to ensure that unions, the strongest line of defense of our working people, are strong, that they have the right to organize, and they have the right to protect American workers the way that they always have throughout the history of our great country. That the Republicans are robbing you, your family, your children, just so they can give it to their big donors. We need someone to go to Washington with this message that's going to fight for you, that's going to stand up to these giant corporations the way that I do every single day as a labor lawyer representing working people against the largest, most greedy companies in the country. And united, together, we're going to do it. Thank you.
I've been working in poor areas where I've had no job. I worked my way up from the bottom to a management level position in the government. I have many friends with different backgrounds, different jobs, and we've all talked and we've looked back at where we've come from. We looked back at our parents who had two jobs at the time, who struggled with money, making, being able to buy food, being able to pay all their bills, being able to support their family. And it was tough back 20, 30 years ago. Today it's even worse. I'm worried about my two kids, whether they're gonna finish high school. There's not a living wage once you finish high school. They need to keep living with their parents just to be able to make it. I'm sure many of you might agree with that. What I'm really concerned about is education as well. We don't have enough educational options for people who are poor, for people who have a struggling family or struggling to make it by, to be able to pay and afford education. I believe we should have a free tuition. We need to provide them an education to be able to get into the workforce. 70% of the disabled groups don't have jobs. Why is this? Because there are greedy corporations out there who are controlling who has access to these jobs. This tax bill I see as a huge ripoff. This trickle-down economy does not work. So that they get more money and hopefully pass it on to us. This does not help the economy. The rich people aren't going to help us do this. It's great only if everything is on an equal playing field. You know, but you have these white old men who are getting rich. It's not fair. They're taking advantage of all of society, and this needs to stop. When I get into Congress, we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about these issues. Thank you.
trader for one of the biggest commodity trading companies in the world. So I've been in the belly of the beast. And it's partly why I'm running. I feel like I need to pay back society because I worked for the bad guys for about 20 years. And the thing you have to remember about corporations is they are greedy. They're like an animal. And what they eat are profits. They don't care about you. They don't care about your children. They don't care about the economy. They're multinational corporations. As soon as they bleed us dry, they'll move on to the next market. And you can't count on them to do the right thing for the country. And unfortunately, what's been said earlier is that they have enough money to buy our politicians. I was there, big corporation. We got in trouble for giving too much money to candidates. We actually got in legal trouble, and they were given to both sides. We hedged our bet. We didn't know who was going to win, so we gave to both parties. And they're very inexpensive to buy, and they make huge differences in your profit. I work for ADM, Archer Daniels Midland. One of their main products is high fructose corn syrup. Probably the worst thing you can put in your body. But guess what? We got government subsidies to make it. Because it was made out of corn. So if it's made out of corn, it must be good for America. The second biggest product they made is ethanol. Same thing, it takes more energy to make ethanol than the ethanol produces. And guess what? We got a government subsidy for ethanol. We still do, because it's made from corn. So, you know, we as citizens have to stop relying on our politicians to be leaders. We have to police our politicians. We have to make sure that they're working for us and not for the big corps. And that's one thing I pushed out in 2016 about Kevin Yoder when I looked into his background. The first thing you want to do with any politician is look at where do they get their funding, because that tells you who they're working for. In 2016, Kevin Yoder got 1% of his funding from people that live in the district. 99% came from people buying his influence. I want to go to Washington and change that. Thank you.
All right, candidates, thank you very much for your answer to the first question. One more time, we're going to try to hold you guys for 2 minutes, not because we don't agree with what you're saying, but because we'll get to fewer questions and we'll hear less from you in the end if we don't have you stick to 2 minutes. And for that same reason, it is really important to hold your applause during those 2 minutes because you are taking time away from the candidate. So it's really important to wait until the very end. Our next question will deal with net neutrality. As everyone saw this past week, the FCC voted to roll back Obama-era net neutrality protections. Our question simply is, how would you work to keep the internet a free and open place? Mr. Wilder, question is to you.
Net neutrality is a funny name for something that's really, really important. And what it is keeping the internet the way that it's always been. My background is grassroots organizing. I've been a grassroots organizer for 20 years, working with President Obama, John Kerry, Bernie Sanders' campaign, as a national field director for the International Brotherhood of Teamsters Labor Union. And in our 21st century democracy, access to truthful information is so vital. And the forces against us, these giant corporations, these billionaires, know that if we can't get on and get free access to good information on the internet, that they can use ads paid for by the Koch brothers, by billionaires, to trick all of us and to lie to us. And that's why they're trying to stop it. Another reason they're trying to stop it: grassroots organizing, power of the people, is the one thing that we can do to fight back against the billionaires, against the corruption of our economy, against the corruption of our political system. And the best way to organize, and one of the most effective tools we have, is an open and free internet. I'm sure many of you in this room remember the Arab Spring in the Middle East, where they were able to put together, for the first time, peaceful revolutions, where they took down dictators, and the people took back power in their government. And the way that they were able to do that was with free and open access to the internet. We are going to fight back against the giant corporations, against the billionaires, taking this freedom away from us. We can pass a bill in Congress to bring back net neutrality, and together we are going to do it.
You are listening to excerpts from a candidate forum held December 19, 2017 between the four Democratic candidates to represent the 3rd District of Kansas in the U.S. House. The complete forum is available at workingjournalistpress.com.
You're looking at the man who could write a bill and set up net neutrality for everyone, to set up an entire network. I've been involved in design. I've built full, large data centers. I've been involved with many IT departments designing and coming up with the concept and writing programs for them. It's very important that we have net neutrality. We have the internet. For these deaf people, they rely on video phones now. Can you imagine the idea of not having any kind of internet that would be neutral? What would happen? We would have to pay more because we're deaf, because we use a video phone? That's outrageous. We need to emphasize the importance of setting up a neutral internet and set it as law. That would encourage everybody to have neutral access to the internet. We need this. We have what are called packets. Packets should be equal when you use the internet. That's what you use. They need to be equal across the board for everybody. When I go into Congress, I expect that I would be able to explain to the other Congress people why it's important to understand the need to set up a law for this. Because corporations are taking advantage of profits and profiting from this, from young people who are trying to access their education this way, trying to get online to get their technology needs met. They're trying to have an internet at home. They need access to education. They need access to all this information. Minority groups, they need this to get all of the news and information that's not controlled by a white population. That's why it's super important we set a law for this, and I will be able to do it. Thank you.
No matter what the issue is, it always boils down to the same thing. It's all about corporate profits. You look at the quality of life of the middle class back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and into the mid-70s, went on a straight-up trajectory. I mean, everybody's quality of life went up. I grew up in the perfect time to be a middle-class American. My family were working people. We had a nice home. We had two cars. We took vacations. We had health care. My parents could put me through college. I got out of college, a wonderful working environment, and I have two young children in public schools, and when I jumped in the race, I was worried that they weren't going to have that kind of environment. And if you look at a chart that shows the quality of life of the average American citizen, when it peaked in 1978, it started going down. Guess what turned up? Corporate profits. And so that's what's been going on. This hasn't been a thing that's happened overnight. And like I say, they've become experts at buying our politicians. So even though 80% of the people in the country want net neutrality, it's probably not going to happen because we've elected the wrong people. And so that's how we fix all these problems. We can have events like this where we get mad and we kind of preach to the choir. And I get in trouble sometimes because I go to events like this and people come here and then that's all they do. Or they go home and they talk to their friends about it. What we need to do as a party is go out there and convince the people that are voting for these Republicans why they shouldn't. And when I started raising money back in 2016, I started calling Republicans that maxed out to Kevin Yoder. And my campaign thought I was nuts. They go, Jay, why are you calling those people? They're obviously not going to give you money. And I said, well, give me 50 names. Let me try. And I found out that these Republicans are only this deep into their party. If you tell them what's really going on and explain it to them in a way that's understandable and it makes sense to them, they will switch. I have these discussions all the time. I went to a group of women, the Junior League of Johnson County. My dad. Oops, am I done? Okay. Thank you, guys.
That the internet is treated as a public utility. So I think that what Congress needs to do is draft legislation that protects the internet and protects the neutrality of the internet to guarantee that we have free access. Now this is fundamentally important in our In our third district, we have portions of our high school population where only 50% have access to the internet, broadband internet outside of school. We use the internet as one of the great resources for information. And if we do away with net neutrality, we are restricting the access of information. And by restricting the access of information to those who already don't have full access, we are only increasing the divide between the haves and the have-nots. So it is absolutely imperative that Congress act to draft legislation to protect net neutrality.
Thank you, candidates, for your response to that question. Our next question will focus on sexual harassment and assault. Many political candidates and elected officials have been recently accused of sexual harassment or assault. How would you work to ensure that members of the United States Congress are held to the highest standard of conduct? Would you support something like the Me Too Congress bill, which would overhaul the current lackluster policies to combat and report complaints of sexual harassment on Capitol Hill?
And we'll start with Mr. Walder, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Hallmark.
I'm comfortable discussing this issue. Being deaf, I know it's necessary for the people who aren't deaf to be able to discuss things that go on with a deaf person. I've been oppressed, I've been marginalized, I've been discriminated against, just like a lot of the females have. I've unpacked a lot of my provision and my privilege, and so I welcome this discussion. I'm an open book when it comes to it. When I go into Congress, I want women as part of my team. I want their abilities, and I want them to communicate with me their needs to help me make changes to make sure this is equal. Secondly, I want to set up a safe environment for everyone, for all women, to be able to work in my office. I refuse any visitors to come in who have any kind of past criminal, past any kind of history. That's the policy I want to set. And it's the same for the deaf group as well. I feel comfortable with those people, and I want people to accept and feel comfortable around deaf people. And I encourage a bill to be set and passed as a law into legislation that all congressmen, all congresswomen, everybody needs to respect women on the same level. There's no marginalizing them. There's no feeling unsafe for them. This needs to be equal for them. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Seide?
Like I said, I've been in the corporate environment, and we had sexual harassment training, and I was a manager. I managed probably 300-400 people at a time. But it was kind of a joke, to be honest with you, the way they treated it. And it basically boils down to there has to be structure in place so victims can feel like they can come forward. That's the big problem. And if you're being, if you're being sexually harassed in a big corporation and you're trying to move your way up the food chain and you go to your boss and say, hey, this is going on, and the person that's doing it to you is an important person, it's going to affect your career. There's just no doubt in my mind. And that's the problem. You know, the people that are victims don't feel safe to come forward. And that's our first hurdle that we have to get over. And then once we have some training involved too, we get some realistic training about what sexual harassment is. And the second thing, you can't wait till somebody gets to Congress to try and teach them to be a decent person. You know, we need to start doing some sexual training in the grade schools. You know, you got to teach kids how to treat other kids. You know, it's something that really isn't done, I don't think. I think it's a long-standing problem. There's some things that have to change first, and everybody can have good intentions. But if people don't feel safe coming forward, and that's why we've had this avalanche of people coming forward. Somebody did it, and it paved the way for people to have the confidence to come out. So this is the best thing that could have ever happened. I know some people are tired of it. I know when Ramsey got in trouble, there's some Facebook talk about, you know, this enough's enough. But, you know, it's the best thing that could have happened for the working woman. Thank you.
I think that there are an awful lot of political and social issues that are very complex, but this is not one of them. This is behavior that is reprehensible, that has to stop. In Congress, I would absolutely support the Me Too Congress legislation to ensure that this behavior ends. We need to ensure that everyone in Congress, everyone in public service, is held to the highest possible standard of behavior. And that's what I would work to do as your congressman.
The Me Too movement is one of the most important developments and movements that I've seen in a long time. And it's about a couple of things. It's about empowering women. It's about women's rights. You know, I think it reminds me a lot of the Black Lives Matter movement and all of the great advances we've been able to make there. And what it's really also about is making sure that women, when they bring accusations of sexual harassment, are taken seriously. They haven't been before, and we're on the path to doing it now. When I'm in Congress, I'm going to support legislation that can seriously hold Congress accountable. I think there needs to be legislation that makes sure that members of Congress accused of harassment would also have to repay the Treasury for the settlements paid to the victims. I think we need the Office of Compliance to publish the names and employing offices and the monetary amounts of settlements on websites and make it clear to the public who is engaged in this. We need to make sure that unpaid workers on Capitol Hill, like interns, fellows, pages, would be eligible for the same protections that are given to staff members. And leadership starts at the top. I'm running against a Congressman, Kevin Yoder, that thought it was appropriate at the Sea of Galilee to strip naked in front of staff members, in front of children of his fellow congressional colleagues, in a body of water that is a sacred religious place. That is inappropriate. It's unacceptable. When I'm in Congress, I'm going to make sure that I set an example for our staff and take action on legislation to make it stop.
You are listening to excerpts from a candidate forum held December 19, 2017 between the four Democratic candidates to represent the 3rd District of Kansas in the U.S. House.
So this is going to be our fourth prepared question the candidates received 2 weeks ago. After this, we're going to move on to audience-submitted questions. And this question has to do with the LGBTQIA community. The question is, the Supreme Court case of Baker versus same-sex couple and proposed religious protection laws demonstrate that the LGBTQIA community is vulnerable under the current administration. If elected, how will you ensure protection of this community? And I believe we're back to Mr. Seide.
It's kind of interesting that the Republican Party is very concerned about freedoms, like carrying a gun into an event like this. But when it comes to freedom of who you should love, they don't think you should have that freedom. And I would go to Congress and make sure that all Americans, my grandfather fought in World War I, my dad fought in World War II. Now, I was pretty lucky. I was kind of born when there wasn't much going on. So I haven't had to go out and serve my country in a way that it shows the patriotism they have. But I think this is why I'm running. I want to do what's right for the American people, to keep us a free society where we can live lives without discrimination. Because these liberty laws, or whatever they want to call them, the religious groups, it's really just a form of discrimination. It has no place in America. And I want to go to Congress and make sure that everybody has the same rights. Thank you.
My older brother is gay, and he has been married to the same man for over two decades. And in fact, they have been together longer than my wife and I have been together. My father, who is a retired Lutheran minister, actually married my brother and brother-in-law back when it was illegal. I had, growing up, a front row seat to see the struggles that members of the LGBTQ community endured. And I want to do everything possible as a member of Congress to pass legislation that ensures that future generations of LGBTQ people don't have to suffer the struggles or the indignities that my brother and my brother-in-law suffered.
Back in 2006, several years ago, had the pleasure of working as a grassroots organizer and helping elect Patrick Murphy, a young, great guy, and was actually the first Iraq War veteran ever elected to the United States Congress. And I also had the pleasure of working with him because of his dedication to the rights of LGBTQIA members of our community. And he, when in Congress, led the fight and got the Don't Ask, Don't Tell bill overturned. He is an inspiration to me, and he is helping me with my campaign. Now, our brothers in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, queer, intersex, and asexual community, to this day, are discriminated against on a daily basis in life and in the workplace. Kevin Yoder, on the other hand, voted to spend millions of dollars on taxpayer money for a horrible discriminatory bill called the Defense of Marriage Act. Now, luckily, due to grassroots effort, people like you for the last decade fighting for rights for people who didn't have a voice in our society, we now have gay marriage as the law of the land. And now, thank you, and now, it is, I wouldn't cut you off except for, didn't want to get a man. And now we need to make sure that the law of the land allows those people to adopt children as well, because they are loving families, and there are so many children out there that need a great home.
Thank you all for your thoughtful responses. We are getting close to the end of our forum, so we will go ahead and move to our closing statements. Each of you will have up to 2 minutes to provide closing remarks, and we will go ahead and get started with, I believe it was Mr. Hallmark.
Before I give you a story about my father, I wanted to ask you to look at our Facebook page. It's Hallmark for Congress. Every day I put a video up there, I caption, both in English and one in Spanish. I encourage you all to join, look at these videos. I do them every day, I'm gonna do them every day till the primary. A long time ago in 2006, my father was watching a movie with me. It was a horror film. And I saw the captioning on there, and I saw in there it said, scary music. And that came up, and I was confused. I didn't know what scary music was. And I said, hey, Dad, you know, it's cheating or something. I mean, obviously something scary is going to happen. Have you been hearing this all along? Because I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know I was supposed to be scared. You know, I need to know if I need to defend myself or not. I said, no, son, you know, that's not what it is. So he explained it to me, that this music was ramping up, and it gets your brain in, like, this defensive mode so you can get scared. And it would make it, you know, even more elevated for him. So that made sense to me on a certain level. In 2007, about a year later, my father texted me and told me that he was on the way he was going to take his grandson out for ice cream. I told him to meet me at the Capitol. So what had happened is he showed up while I was standing in front of a crowd leading a protest of all deaf people. And we were fighting for budget in our deaf schools at the time, and the governor was going to cut the budget. My dad showed up and he said, what is going on? What are you doing here? And I remember smiling and shaking my head, and I told him, I said, can't you hear it? That's my fight music. Can you hear it? Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll move to Mr. Seide.
Okay, so hopefully people all recognize me when I came in tonight because I ran in 2016. Some things you may not know about the race. I did lose, by the way. But I knew it was a very high probability that was going to happen. But like I said earlier, I was building a foundation to run in 18. And I did manage to raise $3 million in 2018. We spent that whole $3 million building my name recognition and brand identity. Now, a lot of people come up to me on the street and say, wow, I saw those negative ads about you on TV when you ran against Schroeder. How did that affect you? And I said, I loved it. And they said, why? And I said, well, because that was free advertising for me. I mean, I spent $3 million. Kevin probably spent at least $2 million running attack ads. And most of the people would just see my face on the screen and they turn the volume down, so they didn't hear the dialogue anyway. So, I got a lot of name recognition out of that. I jumped in the race late because, like I said, I wasn't planning to be a politician. I got asked, and I decided to give it a whirl. And so I had zero money, zero political structure, and zero experience being a politician. You know, I watched a lot, thought I knew what I was doing. So I started out the race down 50 points to Kevin Yoder. And I was calling people for money. You know, savvy political people that Jay. Why would I give you money? You can't win. And I go, well, I think I can. Give me a shot. Give me a little bit of money. So they did. So and I got in late, so there's about 4 months to go. I'm down 50 points. Nobody gives me a snowball's chance in hell. With 2 weeks to go, I'm within 3 points. I gained 47 points on an incumbent Republican that had $5 million. It was the biggest gain of any Democrat in the country. So I've got a track record of running hard. Like I said, I was in corporate America. I came out of college, started on as a trainee in 1980. By 1985, I was a vice president. So when I have a task at hand, I go after it hard, and I've proven that I can raise money and that I can take on a strong incumbent and give him one heck of a shot. And so now the hardest thing, people come up and go, is it harder running in your primary or in the general? And I said, it's much harder running in the primary. Because I like all these guys, you know. Please, we're not that different. But if I was going to differentiate myself from them, you have to look at who is the Democrat that probably has the most support, you know. Who's endorsing these candidates? And if you could pick anybody for your endorser, who would it be?
Thank you, Mr. Seide.
Okay, I got to say one word, though. My endorsers were Kathleen Sebelius, Dennis Moore, and Barack Obama. I'm the only candidate he endorsed in Missouri or Kansas. So I think that gives me some.
Thank you.
I think the current class of professional politicians currently occupy D.C. have entirely forgotten the ideal of the citizen legislator that the founders had envisioned when they started the United States. I am a member of the middle class. I am a teacher. I have spent my entire professional career working in the communities, serving the people that I live with. I know what it's like for the struggle of middle class families. I know the obstacles that young people are facing. I am also a scholar of American history, and I am convinced that there is more that unites us than divides us. I also think that if we approach these problems with the firm belief that government is designed to improve the lives of people, we can then take action to make sure that government is responsive to our needs. I want to be that congressional representative that understands those values, that represents those values, that demonstrates those values. And I hope that over the course of this campaign, I will earn your support and you'll join me in that fight. Thank you.
This is an amazing room that we're in here today.
hundreds of Democrats across the district that I'm quite sure want to beat Kevin Yoder.
Yes.
Donald Trump is completely insane. But worse, he's really just a horrible person that's taking advantage of every one of us and the people we care about. It is so extremely important that we beat these people. But you know what? For years, the Republican Party has tried to be strong. But you know what beats strong and wrong? Strong and right. And that's what the Democratic Party is. We stand for so many things that will help our friends, our neighbors, our family. We need Medicare for all, for every single man, woman, and child in America. We need to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. We need debt-free education from pre-K all the way through college. We need to stand strong for women's rights. We need to stand strong for racial justice. All of us in this room stand strong for immigrant rights, for the battle against climate change, and to protect working people. Now, I am thrilled and honored to have in my campaign several endorsements from national groups, local groups, labor unions, Our Revolution Kansas City, one of the best activist groups in the area, Dr. Cornel Rope West, a civil rights leader, Jason Kander and Andrea Ramsey, Justice Democrats, a national organization dedicated to fighting back against big money in politics, and current and former members of Congress who are going to come here, along with these labor union groups, along with these grassroots groups, and they're going to come out here and they're going to help us to defeat Kevin Yoder. But you know what the most important endorsement anybody can get? It's you. It's everyone in this room. And if you are dedicated to helping us out, not just coming to this forum, but defeating Kevin Yoder, please stand up right now, look around the room, give yourselves a round of applause, and no matter who you support, let's march out this room together, go into our communities, and defeat Kevin Yoder.
You have been listening to excerpts from a candidate forum organized December 19, 2017 by the Young Democrats of Johnson County, Kansas. This forum featured the four candidates currently campaigning to be selected in the August 7 primary to compete in the November 6 general election to represent the 3rd District of Kansas in the U.S. House. The incumbent is Republican Kevin Yoder. The full forum is available at workingjournalistpress.com. The opinions you have heard are those of the speakers and do not reflect any official position of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project, or any employees or volunteers.